the studio this morning, I have Richard Main. He's the project manager for the Gardens for Health initiative here in Auckland, New Zealand. Richard, kia ora.
Kia ora to you, Tim, and it's lovely being here at Planet FM this morning.
Yes, lovely day again too. We're very, very fortunate.
Challenging day in the garden with
very,
the heat.
Very much so.
And the dry.
Get that water in. Richard, can you give the listeners a broad understanding of what you are doing, what I feel is a really superb initiative?
We're taking this community initiative right across Auckland after having piloted the scheme in Counties Manukau through 2009. We hope that this initiative will realise healthy outcomes for a wide range of people, particularly Maori, Pacific Island and South Asian communities who have the highest levels of diabetes, particularly in Counties Manukau.
How come this high level of diabetes?
Well, diabetes is a lifestyle disease, really. It's a disease of a lack of activity, a lack of physical activity. It's a disease of the way we live, the pace we live in this urban environment, whereby people are very hurried about their food preparation. They don't grow their own food in many cases anymore. They rely on takeaways. Their sugar contents are very high. Their fat levels are very high. It's all not so good, but we're turning that around and we're enabling people to go gardening and to take some control of their lives by growing their own food in a community setting.
And your role in this?
My role is actually just sort of, it's a bit like a web, really. Maybe I'm the honeybee, and I'm just going around ensuring that everything is enabling, being the liaison person, just enthusing people, working at the funding level, sourcing funding, whole range of levels. So you could say that I'm sort of scoping from the project management level right through to the implementation, including the teaching, because I have a teaching background. So I'm able to offer that training sessions for various groups. Because many people we find, Tim, they don't have the skills. There's a lost generation out there. Many people have had no concept of what food is about, where it comes from. They don't know where carrots come from. They don't know how to grow. But we're finding that people are coming forward in their thousands and very positive about being part of this and securing their family's future, securing the health of their families.
So this started off initially in a smaller area, and you say South Auckland, but now it's growing and expanding across Auckland. Is that what you're saying?
That's right, Tim. The beginnings go back to 2006, and the Let's Beat Diabetes team at Counties Manukau District Health Board were doing some surveys, some groundbreaking surveys on in and around diabetes and obesity. And they established through the surveys that many people didn't have much knowledge about 5-plus a day, what sort of food to eat, what's the combinations. They certainly didn't know how to grow the food, and they saw an opportunity at the District Health Board to develop a business plan through 2008, and that was approved by the District Health Board and a raft of stakeholders, and it's moved forward very rapidly since then. So it was piloted within Counties Manukau, given that Counties Manukau District have the highest level, one of the highest national levels of diabetes among the adult population. And what I'm saying, Tim, here was we're looking at 29,000 cases of diabetes, type 2 diabetes in Counties Manukau alone. And those stats don't include the juveniles, the young people, as young as 7 to 11, who are now have symptoms of diabetes.
South Auckland, of course, got a huge mix of different cultures, hasn't it?
Yes, huge ethnic diversity there. Strong Pacific population, as many people have known, and the Pacific population have the highest level of diabetes, followed by the Indian population. And so that surprises, that actually surprises many people, because many people believe Indians have traditionally have a vegetarian sort of based diet, but in fact, once they get into their 40s and 50s, they tend to exercise less, pack a lot of weight around the middle, around the tummy, and a lot of the food, while they have vegetables in their diet, in their meals, a lot of it's cooked and a lot of it's curried, and not a lot of fresh vegetables, and a high level of oils and fats. and in some cases sugars. And the third group, of course, Māori, who have, they are third on the list in terms of levels of diabetes. But this is not just something that those three groups we have problems with. It's across all ethnic groupings. The Asian population now seem to be, the level of their diabetes is increasing rapidly because they're having a more westernized type of diet. And their lifestyle has changed. If they're new immigrants or fairly new immigrants in China, their lifestyle's changed as they come to New Zealand.
For overseas listeners, they may not realise that New Zealand and Auckland in particular has the largest Polynesian population on Earth. And so they have so many different island groups in the South Pacific that these people come to New Zealand and they get tied up with the Western diet. They lose the affinity with their tropical diet.
Yes, and they probably the biggest concern for the Pacific population is that they cannot grow their traditional crops as well under New Zealand conditions.
Cold conditions.
To some degree, Tim, under Auckland's summer conditions, they can grow their taro and the like and some other crops, but they are somewhat restricted and they can't grow, you know, have difficulty growing things like breadfruit, mangoes or pawpaw or pineapple, you know, all that fresh zests for like food that is available almost in a jungle setting in the Pacific Islands.
Quite extreme, really. And so the benefits that we're going to get from this project, of course, is people going to be out, they're going to be communicating.
Well, the benefits are manifold, and we tick up many of the health boxes because we're engaging people in physical activity. We're encouraging people to learn new skills around growing food. We're also encouraging people to take that food into their home environment and to cook it in a good manner, using the best products and ingredients and additives and the like. So we engage people in that health activity on many, many ways, and including we have environmental factors and cultural factors that which are really important in terms of actually outcome. We're wanting to encourage people to develop the best sustainable practices. And those best sustainable practices around growing food in a more natural way, avoiding the use of chemicals, harsh chemicals, on the land and on food, and also reducing or eliminating the use of artificial fertilizers. And, of course, we're looking also at opportunities to encourage people in traditional gardening. So the way people have gardened, the Maori Pacific approach to gardening, the Indian approach to gardening, or the Somali approach to gardening. We'd like them to take that approach into their gardening. So, and people get buy-in by being involved with that. They are empowered by being able to channel their energies into food that is part of their cultural makeup. So I guess we're wanting to encourage people in a community setting to go gardening, but ultimately the ultimate goal is to get people to garden in their home backyard. And that's a very powerful force for change for that transfer from a community gardening setting and a community hub setting, and working with other people, learning with other people, sharing ideas with other people. Very powerful, Tim. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just food is a catalyst for change. So we really, there's a whole raft of physical, social, economic, cultural and environmental benefits to gardening. And we're trying to ensure that as we roll into the new super city environment, that the Auckland ATA organisation perhaps consider at a community-based level initiatives around community gardening, and so that it can actually be part of the framework of the new city. So there are forces and there are other people other than myself, some of my colleagues and associates who are actually pushing that change at it's a mentality change for many people at local government to have gardens happening, to have gardens in a parks-like setting, such as being set up by the Manukau City Parks. It's quite innovative.
So the land, how do the gardeners get their land?
They get their land. Some organisations have land. We're working with church groups, for instance, Seventh-day Adventist churches, Methodist churches in counties Manukau, and many of the churches have generous amounts of land. If they haven't got land, we're encouraging people to engage in community gardening through the teaching park, teaching gardens set up through the Manukau City Parks, and also down at Franklin, in Pukekohe, and in Tuakau, there's a garden down there. So there's many different settings for community gardens. Some of them are in churches, church environments. Some are on rise. Some are within schools. Some of them within trust organisations, health providers, government departments. We're going into all different types of environments to encourage people to go gardening. We really want gardening to be the norm again.
I definitely agree. So who's funding you? Where are you getting your finances to make this all happen?
Well, it's a good question, Tim. The funding is coming from the Ministry of Health and has from day one, from 2009.
This is the government, the Ministry of Health?
Yes, government, Ministry of Health, New Zealand government. And the funding is being channeled generally through the district health boards. So initially with the pilot in 2008-2009, the funding was channeled through the county's Manukau District Health Board and various pools of community action funding, whether that be Pacific, Maori, South Asian, which covers the Indian population, or other groups. So there was money there up until June of last year. However, since the government has restructured, is currently restructuring health, some of those pools of money are now not going to be so readily available. And the nutritional fund, which was very supportive of gardens in the school environment, in the school setting, some of that money is less likely to be available in the future. So real challenges for us, but now that we've got the Ministry of Health supporting with the three district health boards, that's Counties Manukau District Health Board, Auckland District Health Board, and Waitemata District Health Board, to take this initiative across the whole of the Auckland Isthmus, and they have provided some stimulus sort of funding through to June of this year, or end of June of this year. And we're confident that we can secure further funding from government sources through the rest of the year. But we're not reliant totally on that government source of funding. We're reaching out to organisations for money, and we've put in a very substantial application to a trust just recently. And my general manager, Karen Pickering, at the Diabetes Project Trust, and I, this month, will be looking at making applications for further funding. So it's all looking good. And realistically, we don't need that much money to set up a garden. But ultimately, to sustain a garden, sustain communities, we're going to need people in key roles. Mentors and guides are a key, pivotal sort of position. And organisations need to be supported over and above the initial funding for things like seed and tools and equipment and water tanks and those sorts of things.
And where do you get the seeds and tools, etc.?
So we get them from a wide range of sources. I try and steer people towards securing organic seed, for instance. So there are seed producing networks around New Zealand, whether they be small or larger, that provide a range of seed, some certified, some organic. And we will encourage people to try and source seed from wherever they can, particularly source local if they can, because if you've got local seed, that tends to do best in your local area. And I'm developing a resource kit for community organisations who are looking to set up gardens so that I can provide that resource in terms of code of practices, where to go to get supplies, whether it be a water tank or if they need irrigation equipment. And there's a whole raft of that sort of resource information that people are seeking. So we're building that capacity. And once we have our website up and running at the Diabetes Projects Trust, that should be an important communication link for interested parties existing and for those in the future who want established community gardens.
So how many community gardens do you have up and running right at this moment?
We've got 18 community gardens, Tim, running in County's Manukau District area. That's an area that's somewhat south of Waiuku, out to the Awhitu Peninsula in the west, across to Hauwick and Moraitai in the east, and to the north to sort of south Otahu and Mangere Bridge. Now, those 18 community gardens, six of those community gardens are within the Manukau City Parks environment. We term them teaching gardens. So people come into those settings for a 22-week teaching experience. So they're allocated an allotment, a space, and during that 22-week period, there are people who come in and provide training. so that they're upskilled around sowing seed and preparing the soil and all those types of things. And they grow their crops during that phase of 22 weeks. And the endeavour then is for them to be enthused enough and have some skills by that time that they can actually take what they learn in that community setting and start their gardens in their backyard. And then a new group of people come in, those teaching gardens. So we've got gardens in a whole raft of different settings. As I said, on Marais, government departments, we've got the spinal unit at Otara. We've set up a garden there for people who are bound to wheelchairs. So that was quite a innovative approach because it had never been really done before in New Zealand, and it was received with much enthusiasm by staff and outpatients and inpatients. And we've also set up a garden at the Mangere Refugee Centre for the 700 or so refugees who come into New Zealand every year and with their families. And that's a story in itself. It's quite tantalising, really, how it's actually been a binding force for new immigrants to New Zealand who have come from, in many cases, very difficult environments. You know, they've been in camps and they've had all sorts of unpleasant things happen to them in their lives. So the garden and the development of an opportunity to come into the garden has been quite instrumental in bedding them down and settling them into a New Zealand environment, even if it's only the six-week period that they're at the refugee centre. We're going into churches, and we've got quite a few new churches and church organisations who are interested in starting gardens, and they're going to happen over the next period of 2 to 3 months. So, as I said, we've got 18 community gardens up and running at this point. We have another 6 Maori-based community gardens to launch. They're about starting now through March and April. And following that, we have 7 Pacific community gardens that will launch between April and June of this year. That's the story in Counties Manukau. The bigger story is to unfold within wider Auckland, across Auckland, through the 3 district health boards. So I'm making a linkage, I'm developing linkages, having conversations, meeting with interested parties across the other 2 district health boards at this present time. And there are existing community gardens in Auckland and in Waitakere City. We want to build on that. We want to build on that, and there's some real potential out there. And everybody seems to be excited. There's a lot of enthusiasm. There's no negativity about this. It's just capturing people's imagination. And people are just finding it a strong force for change, Tim, that is, I guess, to me, it's more about a holistic approach to living in mind and body and spirit. And I think it's capturing people at that level.
Well, to know that you can grow your own food at your own back door, that's a magnificent start. And if you can halve your grocery bill by 50% or more, that's a huge saving.
So in these more difficult economic times, people are seeking avenues to reduce the amount they have to pay by going to buy their food, whether it be takeaways or even going to the supermarket. So this initiative obviously can be quite instrumental in reducing household budgets. And we're already finding that the anecdotal evidence that people are not only enthusiastic about growing their own food for the first time in some cases, that the noticeable reduction in the amount of food they're having to buy outside of the community garden or outside of their backyard garden.
Because I notice that in summer when you can have salads, and I'll have something like about 12 to 14 different greens in my salad, and then I have my tomatoes and my radish or my capsicums to give it some colour, or grated beetroot or carrot. I mean, the meal itself, you lose weight. You can easily lose weight, and just taking this rainbow diet can make you, just empower you to feel really, really strong and healthy.
Well, there's a lot of radiant energy in fresh food. You can't beat going out to your garden in the evening when you come back from work and picking a cucumber, a tomato, as you do at this time, or some corn, or some eggplant, or chilies, or whatever it be, and bringing it straight to the table and preparing it and sharing it around the table with family and friends. So it's very powerful. And that vitality, that energy is just to capture that as, I think, the pure essence of what we do as food producers. And I think there's a deep down welling within people that they want to reconnect with the land. They want to reconnect with nature. And they're doing that through the power of growing their own food. It's very invigorating being in my position and being able to channel people and connect people and link people. And I just get so much positivity bouncing back from seeing what's happening. Many of these gardens haven't been actually in existence very long. In some cases, 4 months to 6 months. They've only had one summer growing cycle, if that. But already the stories are being told and the smiles are there I see in the garden every day when I visit, when I reconnect with the people involved. And there's some great things happening. In fact, the one good example, Tim, is that the refugee gardens received a human rights citation award in January for the initiative in starting up a community garden for the new refugees. So that was a very positive feedback for the refugee centre. And because it's actually situated where everybody has to drive around the garden as they come in and come out, the management are really enthused with it because it's actually just positive ways of filtering right through the working community at the refugee centre. The facilitators are all now totally on board, where they initially were a little bit reluctant to drive it, to push it. And people like Arif Saeed, who's the community advisor there, just can't get enough of what positive elements are coming from it. And we're looking at reaching out to the refugee community once they leave the centre to see how we can continue to support them when they get relocated, often into New Zealand housing estate areas around New Zealand, and looking how we can help them with their garden developments there as well. So I think a lot of what we're doing is we're not just going in, doing something and leaving and then going away again. We're looking at the sustainability of this. We're looking at ensuring that gardening is part of the normal way of life again, as it was before the 1950s in New Zealand, where, for instance, most schools had gardens. Spark does tell us in their surveys that gardening is still number two as far as a recreational sport. Well, we'll make it number one again, for sure.
Well, I heard from Sue Kedgley, the House spokesman for Green Party, that hospitals prior to the 1950s used to grow a lot of their own food too.
Yes.
And so they would really have nice fresh food in those days. And I have heard there's been about an 800% increase in gardening in the last year since this economic global downturn kicked in.
My evidence, and having worked in the horticulture industry for upwards of 35 years and working with and connecting regularly with retailers and wholesalers and growers, that particularly in the last few years, for things like seed and vegetable and fruit trees, there's been at least in the order of 40 to 60, sometimes even 80% increase in demand. In fact, last year around Auckland, I couldn't get a lot of the citrus range because they just simply ran out. And they went back to suppliers to try and get resupplied, but they just totally ran out. And last year, for things like Louisa Plum, through the King's Plant Barn shops, they ran out very rapidly and they started pre-orders immediately after for this year. So people are really powering up around food and it's all go. And so it's a challenge for the supplier network to actually meet those needs.
Yes,
demand.
Well, it could actually be a win-win situation for New Zealand, because people grow their own food and the exporters can then send all their food offshore if they need to, bearing in mind food miles, etc. And the aim really is to have this system replicated right across the country.
We'd like to see that, and I guess key people are watching and waiting. They've seen the pilot success in Counties Manukau, and that's resulted in it going across Auckland as of this year. And I'm sure with what we can gain from rolling it out through Auckland, I think it'll be a powerful force for it to be expanded through the country. Now, I've actually been receiving lots of calls from other district health boards, from councils all around New Zealand over the last 12 months I've been in this role, basically just seeking ideas around what has worked, what has not worked, looking at the successes, and just wanting to know how things are going. So it's all good. I've just recently come back from my hometown area of Oamaru in North Otago, and just over a year ago they set up a community garden there. It's called the Waitaki Community Garden. I visited there just last week before I returned, and it's quite dynamic, you know, the number of people that are involved there, young and old, all sorts of people, schools coming in for workshops. So it is happening all over the country already, but it needs to be part of a bigger plan.
I certainly agree, but this is really inspiring, Richard. I'm speaking with Richard Main, and Richard is the project manager for Gardens for Health here in Auckland, New Zealand. Richard, your partners who you're working with, can you share just a little bit more so that the listeners can get an understanding of what sort of forces you're working with to be able to pull these various components together?
Our partners or stakeholders are a pretty broad bunch of people representing a wide range of organisations, from government departments such as Housing New Zealand, Ministry of Education, to people like all the councils, representatives from all the councils around New Zealand, including Auckland Regional Council, and also organisations such as people who have product to sell. And they could be people like Bunnings, and who are supported by way of a six-school garden initiative through last year and this year. And other organisations like Living Earth, who supply garden product, potting mixes and soils. So it's pretty diverse. I guess the key thing about the stakeholders and partners is that we do have fairly regular meetings, 5 or 6 meetings per year. So we have a round table opportunity for people to convey what's been happening, what they would like to see happening. I guess the difficulty with those groups is they don't have necessarily any strong binding commitment. They have an essence in terms of actually they like to support it, but they don't have, let's say, a legal basis to which they can actually be a driving force. But certainly at a support level, these organisations are very important. And we're looking to discuss this at length in our future meetings to define better what the roles of these stakeholders and partners are. Some people have been committed since day one, and we have some new partners who are coming in at this point in time. You know, we've got people like the Soil and Health Association, Tree Crop Association of New Zealand. A lot of these groups are developing an interest in this community garden initiative, and they want to be part of it in some shape or form. So we've got to find a basis for where they feel some purpose, and that's something ongoing that will develop, I'm sure, this year.
And for the growers, how do the various growers feel about this? They've had a successful year or so. Pretty excited?
Oh, very excited. And I visited 9 of the community gardens last week and spoke to people at the gardens, both the mentors and guides and some of the participants. And people are just, while it's been tough, as it is tough around New Zealand gardening at the moment because it's so dry, if you've got water available, you're doing well. And most of the gardens have got good water supply, whether that be from tank supply off roofs or main supply, although we're trying to, because the cost of water in Auckland is so high, we're looking at encouraging people to source other forms of water and be more sustainable. But people are, at this point in time, they're harvesting the summer crop. So there's some wonderful product coming off the gardens, including some really interesting cultural food like loki, which is a type of Indian pumpkin-type squash, and all sorts of unusual types of vegetables that, you know, both whether it be the Indian population or we might have Iraqis gardening, some of the food that they like to grow. Indians, of course, like to grow things like chilies and eggplants and coriander, and they're all been doing wonderfully well in just this summer cycle of growth. So people are really enjoying their time, and I think they're enjoying their time in the garden because they're actually working with other people, and that's a very strong force that I sense that is happening. You know, it's not about people doing things individually. They may have allotments, particular gardens, but they're sharing the crop, they're trying new foods, they're learning new skills from other people, and it's all very exciting.
We're getting close to the source, really, isn't it? Is to be able to see that you've got some seeds in your hand 1 month, and then 6 weeks later, to 2 months later, you have got this magnificent vegetable in your hands, and you know that you've produced it yourself, and you've gone and lovingly tended it, kept it watered, mulched the soil, etc. And it just makes you so proud, I feel. I photographed all the food on the table that I had grown because I was so enthused and realised that I could do it. And this was years ago. And I think this is where lots of people just see what they can actually do. And one question, do people tend their garden? Do they have to have shoes on or boots on?
I think in most cases, people, organisations that are running the gardens do ask of people that they wear appropriate clothes. And that appropriate clothing is from top down or bottom up because people, you know, in these sort of weather conditions, hats are essential. Sunblocks are essential depending on your skin colour. And, you know, appropriate clothes to ward off the dangerous sun rays. And people are generally wearing shoes, although some people would like to garden in bare feet. You know, it's very earthy, it's a very connecting form of doing a garden thing. So, yeah, there are rules and regulations, there are codes of practices, protocol have been set in place at the various gardens, and part of my role has been sort of helping people with some of those sort of guidelines.
Very good, Richard. Now, you've got your allotment of land, and as you say, there's some big, some small. How do you share, or how do people keep a certain area for their family? There has to be some sort of system, naturally.
Yes, and that's determined by the various organisations that are actually starting the gardens. They have various models that they can run with, and the allotment gardens are working very well at some gardens, and others are very much a community-based where people share the duties, share the growing, share the harvest, and that also works pretty well. In some gardens, there's a mix of both the community involvement and the allotment-type gardens. So, and some of our gardens are tiny. Some of our gardens are only 350 square metres. Other gardens, there's a new Maori-based garden to launch, or has just launched, King Seat, south of Auckland. And we're talking about a hectare or more. So some are small, some are large, just dependent on the needs of the various groups who are involved and the numbers involved. Now, in the teaching gardens alone within the Manukau City Council environment, there's 600 people growing food. And my estimate at the moment with the 18 community gardens, we have well over 1,000 people participating at community garden level. We have probably at least 250 people to 300 people who have started gardens in their home environment. So it's really accelerating. The momentum is there, and I'm sure we're going to get many, many, many more people involved.
So can you give the listeners just a general account of how an allotment would run over the course of a day? Can you do that?
Yeah, it varies a lot because in some cases the gardens are open almost 24/7 for people to participate in. Some are fenced, some are in secured environments because otherwise the product would be stolen. But I think putting up fences doesn't necessarily do justice. Ultimately, you've got to get buy-in from the wider community. And if that happens to be the gangs, the youth gangs or whoever who are causing grief and trouble in those areas, well, you get them involved as well. So the gardens are, they're happening in a very positive way with a wide range of groups. And we've got ex-gang members who are actually involved in some of the gardens. We've got youth gang members. We've got Maori elders working alongside youth, 17 to 20 year olds, who have been in strife in their early part of their life. So it's a very unifying thing, and I think it is, as again, a repeat, binding people together. So, Tim, just if I could complete that question about the day in the garden for garden participants for many of the sites. It obviously varies a lot, but people will have allocated times where they can come into the garden, where it's open, it happens to be locked, there will be a mentor or a guide there or somebody there to provide a training session, and that might happen two or three times a week where there's sort of supervised assistance. But people will go in there, they'll harvest their crop, they'll look after their watering requirements, and some of their watering requirements may be deep watering with watering cans, it may be drip-feed irrigation, and some garden sites have got overhead sprinklers, particularly the council allotment gardens. So people would probably spend in the region of between an hour and a half, maybe 2 to 3 days a week. Some enthusiasts will be there every day of the week because they've got time. But if people were working, they may come in the evenings. And in fact, some of the gardens are open and have facilities where they've got toilets available and places where people can rest up or in chairs. They've got buildings there. And they've got Saturday sessions. So it really varies. And then other gardens are basically open all the time. There's no barriers. People will come in and do their own thing. But generally, most gardens have got time set up for people to come in and for them to have an opportunity to learn something around some of the gardening cultural needs. And they then just go about there, some weeding, some mulching of the ground, some watering, some harvesting, and then away they go with their produce. So, yeah, 2 to 3 days a week is pretty general for most people. And it's not just the one adult. It might be mum and dad, or it might be mum and auntie, or it could be dad with the kids, or the whole family. So if people have got an allotment, it may be an allotment for one person, but often enough where it's engaging the whole family, which is good, or the wider family.
Yes, definitely a wider family.
Yeah.
And tell me the challenges. What are the challenges? Because this is a big one, because I'd like to see all of New Zealand, all of urban New Zealand, and even little towns doing this.
I think the key thing, Tim, is just keeping the momentum going. I think we've got no issue with that at the moment, because it's coming from grassroots. It's coming from bottom up. I think the capacity building of a team, to build a team to actually drive it, is essential. Because at the moment, that team is pretty much myself working with a whole range of other parties. We are soon to appoint a facilitator to assist as we expand across Auckland. But we could have a team of 5 or 6 people in Auckland as a minimum. We could have mobile teams visiting each site, providing training sessions, working in the gardens as mentors and guides, acquiring resources, doing a whole raft of things. Some of the constraints I see is around the restructuring in the health area at the moment, because we are driven from a health initiative first and foremost. But I've just kept pushing on and really haven't seen it as too much of a barrier at this stage. Ultimately, the essence of self-sufficiency must be established within each of those community gardens. They must have their own support base. They must ultimately be able to secure their own funding. They must be able to generate some income to be able to plough back into those community gardens. The impact of the transition to the super city is a critical one, and we'd like to see some leverage developed by a number of people through the new entity to see whether we can get some buy-in from that new, at a community-based level, around community gardening and about food and around food security in the urban environment. One of the other key issues, Tim, is actually finding the people that have got the skills and the time to actually commit to being the drivers at each garden. We call the drivers mentors and guides. They could be coordinators, whatever term you like to call it.
And it's all voluntary?
Someone's voluntary. Some are paid 5 hours to 10 hours to 15 hours per week, ranging in sort of around $15 to $20 an hour. And they're pivotal. And actually to get those people on a part-time position is very difficult because a lot of people are committed to full-time. But there are people out there, and it's about tapping into them. They may well be people who are involved with garden clubs. So we've been tapping into the garden clubs. And there's a lot of senior citizens, third age people, tremendous background in gardening, either from the perspective that they were gardeners all their lives or they were had roles in the trade. We know people who have been come forward have worked for Yates Seed Company. And there's all those sort of people. It's part of my role is to get out there and reach out and try and find those sort of people. So, yes, there are challenges, but I think there's been so much success. It's such a buoyant concept at the moment that is actually realising some really positive outcomes around health. And it's really going. It's really moving. And let's see what we can achieve around Auckland beyond.
Yes, definitely. So, Richard, what's your dream?
Well, my dream is for Organic 2020 New Zealand. And that's a personal one. And obviously I have an opportunity to provide some guidance around organic sustainable practice. It's an area that I've had considerable experience from my role at the Unitech over 10 years teaching and as a technical role with the Organic Sanctuary there that both my colleague Brendan Hawara and I basically put it together back in 1999. So that organic future for New Zealand I think is still a real reality. And that's something that keeps me driving personally. I'm a vegetarian, so a veganic type approach to growing in New Zealand is an important one too, and limiting or reducing or avoiding the use of animal products. So, but as you said, this could easily go New Zealand-wide, and we know similar sort of projects are operating worldwide, and I think people are looking to see what happens here with this, and I'm very confident that we'll success and New Zealand will ultimately be the place where people will recognise as having a green future for people. And I think that must be based around an organic future, organic sustainable future.
Yes, well, the world is transitioning. People realise now that we've got to change. We've got to find new ways. And it's in our face now. And if we can grow food locally, particularly in our own backyard, and within the community, it sets the standard that, one, we can save money, two, we eat healthily, and we become vital as a result.
And in an urban environment, we ultimately have power to support ourselves and be less reliant on export and less reliant on bringing product in from outside sources that are trucked using incredible costs from all around not only the world but all around New Zealand. If you fly over Auckland, Tim, or much of the urban areas of New Zealand, there's incredible green space. It's just amazing. You look down when you're flying into whatever airport and you see the green space. We've got tremendous capacity to grow our own food in the urban environment. The space of plenty. It's just a case of reaching out there and saying, yes, we can do it.
Excellent, Richard. And your website, Richard?
Yes, we're developing a website at the Diabetes Project Trust, and that website will be a communication link for people interested in gardening at community-based level, and we're hoping to have that up and running by mid to late March.
Good, Richard. What is the website?
The website for Gardens for Health is www.dpt.org.nz.
And DPT stands for?
Diabetes Projects Trust, and they're umbrellaing this gardening initiative to take it across the Auckland region.
Very good. Richard, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you, Tim. It's been a pleasure.